This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Welcome to Radio Reading Services and the Smithsonian Magazine for March 2024. I am your host, Gail Fisher. We are starting a new article this week. It is entitled, The Gospel of Truth, written by Cynthia Greenlee. Feminist, preacher, abolitionist, civil rights pioneer. Now the full story of Sojourner Truth's life and faith is finally coming to light. On May 29, 1851, a woman asked to address the attendees of the Ohio Women's Rights Convention in Akron. She cut a striking figure, close to 6 feet tall even without her crisp bonnet. She was even more than likely the only Black person in the room. A procession of participants had already sounded off about the plight and potential of the fairer sex, quote-unquote, during the two-day gathering. We are told that woman has never excelled in philosophy or any of the branches of mathematics, said abolitionist Emily Rakestraw Robinson, before noting that women were largely barred from higher education. Laura Maria Giddings lamented, the degraded, vicious man, who scarcely knows his right hand from his left, is permitted to vote, while females of the most elevated intelligence are entirely excluded. A dispatch about women's labor from Paulina W. Davis, who would later create the women's rights periodical, The Una, painted a verbal picture of mother and sister toiling like Southern slaves early and late for a son who sleeps in the downiest couch, wears the finest linen, and spends his hundreds of dollars in a wild college life. Yet the only speaker from that day who attained near mythical status was Sojourner Truth, a formerly enslaved traveling preacher from New York State. What exactly she said remains an unknowable mystery. The accounts vary significantly, but all versions of her remarks make one thing clear. Sojourner Truth challenged the idea of women's inferiority. By her words and unparalleled presence, she pushed attendees to see her womanhood and her humanity. Categories typically denied to antebellum Black people, slave or free. The most circulated version of her speech, published by the conference chair Francis Gage 12 years later, quoted Truth as repeating the question, "Aren't I a woman?" while allegedly baring her arm in a show of muscle. Since that day, Sojourner Truth has been known almost entirely for the refrain of that speech. Few people realize that she went on to meet President Lincoln, hobnob with the Uncle Tom Cabin author Harriet Beecher Stowe, and advocate for government land grants for freed people after the Civil War. Her longevity as an evangelist and activist, with four decades of work for Christianity, abolition, suffrage, and Black freedom movements, transcends the soundbite from the Akron Convention. Today, scholars, community organizers, and Truth's own descendants are working to bring a more complex version of her to an American public used to simplistic versions of the past. The woman who would be known as Sojourner Truth was born enslaved as Isabella Belmfree, sometime in the late 1790s in New York. By the time of the Akron Convention, she had become a fixture on the anti-slavery lecture circuit, with the help of anti-slavery advocate and newspaper editor William Lloyd Garrison. She provided a plain-spoken female contrast to the dashing and erudite Frederick Douglass. Though, like him, she labored to control her own story. Unable to read and write, Sojourner Truth was far from mute or ignorant. She published an autobiography, Narrative of Sojourner Truth, a Northern Slave, the year before she spoke in Akron, and she sold copies of it at the convention. The book shared her remarkable story of self-possession under the most dehumanizing circumstances. After her second master's death, she was sold over and over, once bundled with sheep as a package deal. In 1826, after her master broke a promise to free her, she walked her way out of slavery, traveling a road through Ulster County while carrying her infant daughter Sophia and a few worldly goods. She similarly walked to the village of Kingston to file a lawsuit reclaiming her young son, Peter, who had been sold illegally into slavery in Alabama after New York enacted a gradual emancipation law. She was able to raise money from Quaker abolitionists to pay for a lawyer and, remarkably, succeeded. The court ordered the Alabama enslaver to return her son, though her memoir describes her horror at his condition. Quote, "From the crown of his head to the sole of his foot, the callosites and indurations on his entire body were most frightful to behold." End quote. And then there was the vision. Early in life, she said she experienced a flash that affirmed God's omnipresence and her connection with this higher power. That revelation drove her into a series of religious communities. In New York City, she worked as a domestic for the self-proclaimed prophet Matthias, originally named Robert Matthews, who was notorious for dubious sexual and financial practices in his kingdom, quote-unquote. Accused of poisoning members of the cult, Truth sued again in 1835, this time successfully for slander. Free-thinking publisher Gilbert Vail was so swayed by her frankness and ability to provide receipts that he named her in his account of the cult's bizarre inner workings. Fanaticism, its source and influence, illustrated by the simple narrative of Isabella in the case of Matthias. By 1843, she had renamed herself Sojourner Truth, divinely inspired to travel up and down the land, showing people their sins and being assigned to them. At a camp meeting in Northampton, Massachusetts, she sang a rowdy crowd of young men into submission. Ruffians and the prospect of racial violence never seemed to scare her for long. She took the risk of venturing into Ohio, where the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 was being actively implemented. During an 1858 visit to Indiana, anomaly free state that nonetheless discouraged Black people from settling there, she bared her breast to silence a heckler who charged that she was a man in disguise. A later trip to the state during the Civil War landed her in court for breaking a law that forbade African Americans from coming to Indiana, though she was never convicted. Her fearlessness and humor ensured Sojourner Truth a kind of immortality in the popular imagination. Her image peered from a postage stamp in 1986, flew across the stratosphere on the wings of a Norwegian airplane in 2017, and adorned a Google Doodle 2 years later. Libraries, museums, t-shirts, public housing complexes, and a Mars space rover carry her name. She made an appearance on the Apple TV Plus drama Dickinson as a spry 60-year-old who sported a scarlet dress. During her lifetime, Truth was savvy about her own image. She commissioned photographs of herself when the visual technology was in its infancy and sold picture cards with the astute slogan, "I sell the shadow," to support the substance. Critics derided her as a Negro wench and mocked her insights as ridiculous pretense. But Truth was an effective lecturer on the abolitionist circuit. As her renown increased, the media amassed a vast collection of anecdotes brimming with rhetorical brilliance. Her very quotability and array of interests were both her boon and her bane. It's hard to capture the breadth of a woman who straddled various movements for decades. Much easier to remember her for a four-word quote she almost certainly never said. In the early 20th century, Black scholars included Truth in volumes profiling great African Americans. She was featured in the 1914 book, The Negro in American History, and the 1926 collection, Homespun Heroines and Other Women of Distinction. In the 1960s and 70s, second-wave feminists began invoking her in their often failed efforts to unite gender and race. By 1972, when her Akron speech appeared in the anthology, Feminism, the Essential Historical Writings, the catchphrase had been subtly modernized to, "Ain't I a woman?" The revered feminist author Bell Hooks used that phrase as the title for her influential 1981 book about the specific kinds of oppression faced by Black women, as does historical Deborah Gray White with her 1985 study, "Aren't I a Woman? Female Slaves in the Plantation South." Nell Irvin Painter, a professor emerita at American History at Princeton University and a visual artist, published her landmark book, Sojourner Truth, A Life, a Symbol, in 1996, a time when women's studies and Black studies were gaining firmer footholds at American colleges and universities. But her book on Truth met with a curious critical silence, even after she'd written a string of other well-regarded books. The prominent Women's Review of Books did not review it. Her fellow literary scholar and friend, Nellie McKay, made some inquiries at the journal and reported to Painter that a couple of reviewers, quote, had trouble with the book, end quote. In a forthcoming book called I Just Keep Talking, A Life in Essays, Painter identifies the probable source of that trouble. Quote, "My insistence, my exceedingly painstaking documentation that Sojourner Truth did not say, 'Aren't ain't I a woman,'" unquote. Painter still voices frustration about the way this phrase worked its way into the feminist canon. Gage's memory, quote-unquote, of the speech has Truth speaking in the ventriculized dialect that 19th century white authors often put in the mouths of African Americans. Her version begins like this: "Well, chillen, war dar so much racket, dar must be something out there o' kilter." These words seem to situate Truth among the enslaved of the South, a region to which she is never known to have traveled until after the Civil War. Sojourner Truth wasn't Southern, and English wasn't even her mother tongue. Truth was born enslaved by Dutch-speaking New Yorkers, one category of near-forgotten slaveholder inside another nearly-forgotten category, Northerners. New Netherland, a colony that included much of today's New York State, was once the North American outpost of a global Dutch empire. Ghana's infamous Elmina Castle, where captive Africans were held before leaving the continent for the Middle Passage, was in Dutch possession for more than 200 years. Amsterdam refineries used Suriname's plantations to produce the sugar that fed the European sweet tooth. In 1664, the English took over the province of New Amsterdam and renamed it New York. But both slavery and the Dutch language persisted for many generations, particularly in the Hudson Valley, where Truth grew up. About 40% of households in colonial New York City included a bondsperson. Runaway slave ads were sometimes in Dutch, or frequently noted the Dutch or English fluency of the fugitives. In Truth's upstate New York, wealthy Dutch American families flaunted their slaveholding privilege. The powerful Van Rensselaers of Albany showed off their wealth in a 1730s portrait of a white child of the family lounging on a cushion. Seated behind him is a black child or young man whose skin nearly blends in with the background. In 1810, a group of men in New Paltz, Truth's old stomping grounds, founded the Society for Negroes Unsettled, a slaveholders collective that pooled funds for members to hunt down their runaway slaves. There are other reasons to doubt Gage's recall. Her version has Truth saying she had 13 children, though she was known to have just 5. While still enslaved, Truth married an older enslaved man who fathered at least 3 of her children. The paternity of the other 2 has been disputed, and one may have been the result of rape. Gage's version also has her using an anti-Black racial epithet and repeating the phrase, "Aren't I a woman?" as a powerful refrain. But contemporaneous accounts don't include the phrase at all. Weeks after the convention, Truth's friend, Marius Robinson, the editor of the Anti-Slavery Bugle, published his own transcript of the speech. Like Gage, he has Sojourner Truth insisting that she had worked and eaten as much as a man, but the wording and the style are very different. Robinson quotes her saying, quote, "And how came Jesus into the world? Through God, who created him, and woman, who bore him. Man, where is your part?" Close quote. Gage's version goes like this. "Den dat little man in dat black dar, he say women can't have as much rights as man, cause Christ warn't a woman. Whar did your Christ come from? From God and a woman? Man had nothing to do with him." End quote. Truth resented being misrepresented in the papers, as the Bloomington, Illinois newspaper, the Pantograph, reported in 1879. Sojourner also prides herself on a fairly correct English, which is, in all senses, is a foreign language to her, she having spent her early years among people speaking Low Dutch in New York. People who report her often exaggerate her expressions, putting into her mouth the most marked Southern dialect, which Sojourner feels is rather like taking an unfair advantage of her. Those who promoted the "Ain't I a Woman" speech apparently never got the memo. Painter remains firm in her conviction that Robinson's account is more accurate than Gage's. Truth often stayed at Robinson's home when in Ohio, and she may have even vetted his version before it appeared in the newspaper. In the meantime, Painter is working on yet another book about Truth, with the emphatic title, "Sojourner Truth Was a New Yorker, and She Didn't Say That." Before Sojourner Truth had her religious awakening, she used to speak to God in a familiar way, telling him every detail of her suffering. Then she'd demand, "Do you think that's right, God?" Then one day, after she had walked away from slavery and found employment with a neighboring family called the Van Wagenens, she had a vision. as her dictated memoir recounted, God revealed himself to her with all the suddenness of a flash of lightning, showing her in the twinkling of an eye that he was all over, that he pervaded the universe, and that there was no place where God was not. Truth was overwhelmed with shame at the colloquial tone of her earlier prayers. She'd always thought of Jesus as a distant figure, like a Washington or Lafayette, but now he appeared to her delighted mental vision as so mild, so good, and so every way lovely, and he loved her so much. Thus began a long string of residents in religious households or communities. These groups were forged in the foment of the Second Great Awakening, when idiosyncratic Christian sects abounded. She started off as a sort of evangelical Methodist, Painter said, and then she was a perfectionist, a religious persuasion in which people believed they could be free of sin. Then she went to New York City. She was with these upper room groups, prayer revival meetings that started in an upper room of Manhattan's North Reformed Dutch Church and then spread all over the city. Truth moved in and out of spiritualist circles, befriending people who sought communication with the dead. Many Americans are like that, who move through phases in their belief history, said Painter, reflecting on the 19th century. But the big thing, I think, was that she spent so much of her religious time with non-Black people. So it's hard to see her as, say, the forerunner of the Nation of Islam or other Black religious systems in America. Barbara Allen, Truth's sixth-generation granddaughter, has written two children's books, including Remembering Great-Grandma Sojourner Truth. Allen herself has traveled through denominations. She has been Pentecostal and also Methodist, like her ancestor, and is now non-denominational. She says that the memory of Sojourner Truth has been effectively secularized because religious fervor has become such a divisive topic. A lot of people don't want to offend other people, so they try to overlook that part, Allen says, because everybody loves Sojourner. Yet the charismatic language of faith that Truth spoke gained her entry to talk to white Americans with religious social justice bents. From New York City, she walked to Connecticut, where she impressed what her memoir calls a spiritually minded brother in Bristol. The man found her so riveting that he asked her to go speak to a group he knew in Hartford, giving her a note to pass along. Quote, "I send you this living messenger as I believe her to be one that God loves. Please receive her, and she will tell you some new things. Let her tell her story without interrupting her, and give close attention, and you will see that she has got the lever of truth." End quote. By 1844, Truth was craving a quiet place where she could rest for a while. Her new friends in New England connected her with the Northampton Association of Education and Industry, a utopian commune in Massachusetts based on the equality of all races, genders, and religions. Everything was communally owned and funded by a silk mill. This suited Truth. According to her memoir, by the time she left New York City, she had concluded that the rich rob the poor, and the poor rob one another. In Northampton, Truth met Olive Gilbert, who would go on to transcribe Truth's autobiography in the late 1840s. Painter describes it as a celebrity as told to memoir. She also met Frederick Douglass and William Lloyd Garrison, the editor of the anti-slavery The Liberator. With encouragement, she then started giving anti-slavery speeches on programs with celebrated orators. 2 years after the Akron Convention in 1853, Truth spoke at a convention on women's rights in New York City. According to an account later published by suffragist leaders Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Matilda Gage, Harriet Stanton Blanche, and Ida Harper, crowds of jeering men confronted Truth when she took the stage. Sojourner combined in herself, as an individual, the two most hated elements of humanity, the suffragist authors wrote. She was Black, and she was a woman. And all the insults that could be cast upon color and sex were together hurled at her. But there she stood, calm and dignified, a grand, wise woman who could neither read nor write, and yet with deep insight could penetrate the very soul of the universe about her. According to the authors, Truth confronted the leering men, telling them, "Is it not good for me to come and draw forth a spirit to see what kind of spirit people are of?" Ever fond of the animal metaphor, she continued, "I see that some of you have got the spirit of a goose, and some have the spirit of a snake." From there, she went on to tell the biblical story of Queen Esther, concluding, "Women don't get half as much rights as they ought to. We want more, and we will have it." In 1857, Truth moved to Michigan, where she joined a community of progressive Quakers called Harmonia. Nothing remains of the town apart from its cemetery, its residents relocated after a tornado. Not long ago, a postal worker named Kevin Ailes in nearby Bangor, Michigan, was able to find the approximate location of Truth's former home. An expert diver who's located shipwrecks in the Great Lakes, Ailes consulted an 1873 map of Harmonia and saw that Truth had owned three plots, including the former sanctuary in the village. That wasn't new information, but Ailes cross-referenced this information with deeds and calculated the distance from known landmarks. Using a GPS app, he overlaid his geographic markers into a contemporary satellite images and was able to estimate the location of Truth's residence, now underneath a corporate warehouse. We will pick up, continue, and finish the rest of this article next week. So, on behalf of Radio Reading Services, this has been Gail Fisher, bringing you the Smithsonian Magazine for March 2024. We thank you for tuning us in again this week and listening. We wish you a great day, a wonderful week ahead, and as always, please stay safe and healthy.